Davidson. I like this Davidson.
It's the Bottom Line Podcast.
With your host,
Davidson Baker.
What's going on, guys? This is episode 31 of the Bottom Line Podcast. If you don't know, at least you have the good fortune of knowing now that this is the Bottom Line Podcast, and that can only mean that I am your host, Davidson Baker. And man, it's good to be reunited with my man. Joining me is Eli Milligan, the one, the only, Admiral Adderall with the Android phone.
Oh, the green bubbles.
What's up, man? How you doing?
How are you, sir? I see you.
Dude, so yeah, and likewise for you too, man. I'm coming off this long day. I had like 5 interviews today with fighters and shit, and you know, I'm really looking forward to just kicking back and talking about whatever, man. What's grinding your gears right now, bro?
Luis Severino's arms kind of hurt my heart, I'm not gonna lie to you.
More than Sonny Gray's?
We don't. That's like Lord Voldemort. That's the one that shall not be named. That's AJ Burnett. You know, if he was on a bender, you know.
Oh man, you got to be more specific though. People go on benders, bro.
Yeah, well, AJ Burnett needs to not.
No, yeah, I agree. That no one went on a more unique bender though than when. You remember Zumaya? Was his first name Joe?
Oh, Joel Zumaya.
Bro, remember when he got carpal tunnel from playing too much Guitar Hero?
That's like some David Price shit.
Dude, literally, man could not stop playing Guitar Hero 3 and was out for like an entire year because he got carpal tunnel and it was so bad.
The White Sox or the Cubs?
This is when he was with the Tigers.
The Tigers. I'm thinking of Carlos Zambrano. It's another hothead.
Man, I was at the game that he beat the shit out of the water cooler.
Zambrano?
Oh. 8th grade field trip, bro. Like, there's literally 40 of us, literally on the away side dugout side, bro. And all of a sudden, you just hear some, I don't even remember who it was, stand up and go, "Oh my God, he's beating the Gatorade cooler!"
Oh man, that was. I think that's almost like some Paul O'Neill right there. Like, that's a level of, like, I remember that. Oh, gosh.
Bro. Man. It was like, realistically, it was like, oh, man. I mean, that's a moment that, like, because, you know, when you go to games, and obviously there's a different aspect of going to a major league game with your family rather than going with 39 other goons that you're in 8th grade with. And like, dog, it stirred us all up, man. Like, we were all fucking on one.
Dude, I got suspended in the 4th grade going to a Mets Nationals game. And it was a field trip, and we were throwing Twizzlers on the school bus.
Wait, what? Why Twizzlers, though?
Because that's what we had.
You just didn't have anything else?
And rocks. You probably throw rocks at each other, but we had Twizzlers, so.
Dude, a Twizzler can't hurt that bad, though.
I mean, apparently, according to Miss Hayes, it did, so.
Dude, talk to me a little bit about whatever plans you're trying to put together for a sports betting podcast, man. Because, like, dude, I've lately gotten balls deep into sports betting and handicapping.
If I'm being honest with you, I know absolute zero about odds, numbers, and things like that. But it's not something I don't think I can learn. My thoughts are right now is the prime point for doing this. You know, it's because honestly, ESPN is afraid to delve into these waters. They are, and everybody knows it. They were so afraid of fantasy, and now they're afraid of betting. And I think now's the time to capitalize on something like that because, I mean, it is the time. And I think the NFL needed it with all the negative press that the NFL has gotten over the last few months, years. They needed this to help them out because sports betting has been happening, whether people want to acknowledge it or not, but now it's being legalized, if that changes anything. But
I've always used Bovada, man. Like Bovada just on my Safari on my phone. Like literally, I just go in there and place my shit, and it keeps your account in there like it's a PayPal. The only drawback about Bovada though is like you can only withdraw like once every 3 months. So like it's not worth it. It's not worth, you know, like withdrawing if you only won like one bet, because you can't do it again for 3 months.
So they kind of keep you there. It's like when place gives you like rewards.
Oh dude, and that's how I lose money, man. That's how I lose money. I got a balance of like 90 right now though, because I won a couple parlays a couple weeks ago.
On what?
Oh, UFC, dude. Yes. I'm an animal. I'm an animal. I haven't been really picking fights very well the past couple of months, but like first half of the year, I couldn't be stopped.
I don't know if I could do the your gambling on fights. I feel like it can be so one sided. That's definitely like a hard pick. What do you?
And it's like the thing about MMA too is like, you know, for example, in the NFL, say the Patriots are beating. Say the Patriots are beating the Colts by 49 going into the fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew Luck's not going to throw 8 touchdowns and save the day in the fourth quarter, you know?
Exactly.
But in MMA, you could be in typically most fights are 3 rounds, championship fights 5 rounds. In a 3-round fight, man, you could be getting outstruck. Like you could be getting absolutely dominated, and it could be a complete miracle that you made it to see the third round, and all it takes is one punch and the fight's over. One punch can be the equivalent to those 8 touchdowns I previously alluded to. That's why it's so risky. But like, yeah, you know, like I study sometimes these matchups and these stylistic kind of formulas. It was working. I have been struggling the past couple months though. I was not doing as well as I was the first half of the year.
That's kind of my gripe with betting on the NFL. You know, like there are your over unders, and it's just that there's so many variables in place in the NFL. Something like basketball, give me basketball any day. I'm ready to go.
Yeah, bro. Yeah, yeah. Spreads are easier to bet in football, though.
Yeah. Whereas like baseball. Baseball, I refuse. I will never. But you'll never ever catch me betting on a baseball game.
Never, never. Me neither. I mean, because it's like, dude, you really never know. I don't think I've, you know, the odds as far as the money line, like day to day in baseball games, I don't see odds like ever and very rarely higher than like -300 for the favorite. And like, I mean, like today actually the Red Sox I think were -325 against, you know, the Orioles, who are 55 games under 500. But you know, I mean, still -300, like that's not all that big of a favorite at all just because it's baseball.
I can completely agree. I just, it's one swing of the bat, man, and you like, or you have like your random, you know, Armando Galarraga come out and pitch a perfect game. Like I can't do it.
Perfect game though, or he was robbed that perfect game, wasn't he?
Perfect game. It's the only 28 out perfect game.
Kevin, you know Kev, right? Kev Goff. He was there.
Was he really?
Yeah, he told me about it. Yeah, he was there.
God.
Damn. Jim Joyce, one of the best in the business, too, man. I mean, everybody makes mistakes, but boy, that was a critical one.
Best mustache in the business.
Yeah, one of, without a doubt. You know, might have to start ranking these mustaches at some point.
That's great. What do you think about the have you been keeping up with you know, your deals and this the summer league? I feel like the summer league, the NBA has done a great job of being an all year sport.
Absolutely.
Like, I mean, what were your thoughts? What were your takeaways?
Well, to be honest with you, I haven't heard much. I think last summer, the summer league was pushed, like really pushed.
Mm-hmm.
And with the addition of ESPN Plus, I'm not even going as far as saying that this is like the factor as to why, but I do think it comes into play that the addition of ESPN Plus and all of these plucking and picking of where they're going to have exclusive rights for stuff kind of took a majority of the summer league audience that was usually on mainstream cable away, because a lot of those games were on ESPN Plus, a very large percentage. I mean, I pay for ESPN Plus. I love it. I think it's worth $5 a month. Are you kidding me? I think it's worth it. It's literally like on top of all of the ESPN programming and all of the on-demand stuff and all of everything they do. Like, they're like, they're kind of like a mini MLB.TV. They literally show half the MLB games every day. Half of them, not all of them.
They need like a league pass or something to stay relevant, though.
Who?
ESPN.
Well, what do you mean? For like all sports?
Just in general. I mean, like right now we're at the end of the cord cutting, you know? I mean, I see what Disney's doing with their on the top, but, you know, ESPN, I mean, they need to do something. I mean, the reason why people have DirecTV or, you know, similar options is because you have Sunday Ticket or League Pass.
Yeah. Sunday Tickets for two specifically, because it's like exclusive to DirecTV, right?
Yeah. And like ESPN, what, broadcasts 17 regular season games and maybe a wild card game?
Yeah.
What's
not even a divisional game?
Not anymore.
No. I forget, bro. Who's joining? Who is who's in the Monday Night Football booth now that Gruden's in Oakland? I forget. I can't remember.
Witten. Didn't Witten pop in? Or no. I know Witten is broadcasting now.
Yeah, I think he's on Fox though. Here, I'm looking it up. Yo, man, and I want to talk about Tiger, but like I have to ask you this first because I actually alluded to this on my last podcast, and I think literally, bro, with everybody I talk to about it, the takes and the opinions have varied so vastly. And I think it's because this division, specifically in the NFL, coming up this year, is very evenly matched.
I can already tell about the AFC North, right?
No, it's the AFC West.
Really? Oh, well.
The AFC North. I mean, I don't think the Browns are quite there yet, and I'm not too high on the Bengals.
AFC or NFC?
AFC West.
AFC West. You got the Chiefs, you have Oakland, the Chargers, and
Broncos.
And Broncos. I mean, that's kind of like a two horse race to me.
Really? Who would you take out of it?
I would say you're looking at realistically, it's all contingent on how KC and how Mahomes plays. But yeah. I'd put all my chips on Mahomes and Philip Rivers. I mean, Philip Rivers threw 4,000 yards last year. I mean,
yeah. That's my pick. I like the Chargers. Dude, I think the Chargers have one of the most criminally underrated offensive lines in the NFL.
And their defense.
My thing with the AFC West and why I take so much fascination in it going into this year and why I've talked about it so much is because, like, it's so even on my standpoint, I believe it is very evenly matched because all four teams have different areas of strengths to coincide with each four teams' respective weaknesses. Like, dog, do you even want to begin to imagine what Mahomes, Rivers, and Carr are going to have when they go to bed at night the week they have to play the Broncos, and they know that Bradley Chubb and Von Miller are going to be coming off the edge at them? Like, dude. Good God. You can't double team them both.
No, and then you still have, what's his name, in the middle.
Oh, dude, they've had so many changes at defensive tackle. I don't even know who's there at defensive tackle anymore. They don't have Babineau anymore, right?
Wow. Keenan is I think the Broncos, they're
that defense can keep them in games, man. I mean, their record sucked last year, but it's not like they were blown out every week. They were sometimes, but not every week.
How's the depth look? That's the big thing. I mean,
they got weapons on offense too. Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders both on the outside.
My issue with the Broncos probably stems from their defense in that they can't play for 40 minutes a game. If their offense isn't, I mean, yeah, they can keep in the game, but if you're grinding, I mean, look at teams like the Chiefs, teams like the Chargers, who are just going to run the ball down your throat because they know that you're going to hurt them in the air or pass rush them. So run the ball. And then when you start to see them winded, now you go for that, you know, that shot to Hill, or, you know, your slant to Kelce, that's just going to burn you.
Yeah, 100%. Let's move on though, man. Did you watch the PGA yesterday?
Yeah.
14% of televisions in households in America had that on.
Tiger.
14%.
He's
the ratings were up 69%.
You know why?
Of course. You know, I mean, you're cutting out, man.
Don't hear you say it.
Oh, there we go. Hear me say what?
Why were they up?
Because of Tiger Woods, of course.
Because he's what?
Because he's in contention.
Because he's back.
Dude, I know. And like I got an email today because I have subscription to like emails from CBS Sports. And they literally ask the question is like, does this mean Tiger Woods back? And you're just like, dog, like what? Of course he is. Like, what are you talking about? Like, dog, if you were to tell me, and here's I have two big takeaways about it. Three, when you add on to it, the fact that Tiger Woods, A, was only three off coming into Sunday, fresh off of a major that he was also in contention on Sunday. B, 8 birdies. He birdied 8 holes. And C, finished with the highest score in any major he has ever put up in the history of his career in a failing to win effort, all bundled into the fact that when I hear Brooks Koepka talk, man, you can tell when I literally just hear him like talk to the media that dude is probably like a fucking awesome guy. Like I can just tell. Like I think his personality is good, like really good. Don't look now, but I mean, he all of a sudden he's won 2 of the last 5 majors that have been held, and he's only 20 or 3. I mean, 3 of the last 6. 3 of the last 6 majors that have been held, and he's only 28. Monster off the tee. So in conclusion to all of that, if you were to tell me all of those that surrounding evidence with Tiger and for Tiger to not have walked away with his first major in a decade, I would be particularly upset with just about anyone beating him out other than obviously also an incredibly game Brooks Koepka.
I completely agree. I you know, as much as I want to scream, yeah, Tiger's back, I think we can't discount the fact that Brooks Koepka is really good at what he's doing.
So good.
And I think it's a big part of why we've seen this decline. Yeah, you know, his back, his knee, he's gone down the hill from those 300-yard drives every Sunday walking all over the course. However, guys have gotten better. Guys have gotten better. And it's shows that competition. But at the same time, I mean, I was reading an article today about like how many rounds he's missed. He's missed over like 76 rounds in majors. And it is a big part to why, because you look at like they put him and Nicholas, because Nicholas retired at around like 46, like realistically. That was when he won his last major. And not retired, but that's his last major. And Tiger's at 43 right now. And this might be his last push before like his body decides like, hey, we can't do this anymore. Again.
He's gonna win another one though, right?
I hope so. He hasn't.
I think he is, man.
I hope so, man. My grandfather passed away. My grandfather was the biggest Tiger Woods fan, and he passed away right before all the allegations came out in the scandal. So from that point on, like I remember, like thinking to myself, like that would have killed him if you know. Like if he didn't get sick, that would have killed him.
Just right.
Favorite guy go down.
Right. And dude, I mean, like, it's so insane. Like the amount of and tell me if you think it's unfair or a double standard in a sense that while I ask if it is one, I don't have a particular example to point to. But you know, with all of the shit that Tiger Woods dealt with off of the golf course and how much America loves themselves some controversy and how the mainstream viewership number usually has the needle move at a significant rate whenever there's some sort of conflict in any type of capacity. And while people are quick to criticize those for it, that America just loves them some Tiger Woods. That's just all it boils down to. I don't think other people would get the benefit of the doubt. I really don't.
It's I think there's very few sports figures that are that aren't polarizing, and I feel like Tiger's one of those that when Tiger's good, everybody's talking
and watching.
Yeah, I mean, two strokes back. I mean, that's a Herculean effort right there.
I mean, dude, like those numbers, like, are crazy. Like the fact he's three back and birdied 8 holes on Sunday, and he still didn't win. I mean, you know, and what bothers me about it too is like I get where the media is coming from, but like seeing articles with headlines something like "Even though he didn't win, he won." Stop.
Telling that to a competitor is the quickest way to get slapped.
Stop, man. Like, no, I'm not buying that shit.
He's feeling great.
And like, I get what people mean when they say that, bro, like for real, but it's like you're trying to put Tiger Woods on this sort of like honorable mention winner's pedestal at the expense of the guy that deservedly won, man. Like, he literally still won from a charging and surging Tiger Woods wearing red on Sunday that birdied 8 holes. And he played better than he did, man. He deserved it. He did.
I agree. I couldn't agree more. What I can say, though, is that, or ask rather, is what does it take for him to win? Does he need to come out front and just go straight psycho mode? Like, put on his best Klay Thompson face? Or are we going to keep seeing him have to grind out against these guys like he would back in the day against, like, Phil Mickelson, rather?
Right. Like, you know, what this particularly affects for the immediate future of Tiger Woods is, man, he's in play to make that Ryder Cup team, which I would not have been so sure of. If he would have, you know, finished 58th or tied for 58th and barely made the cut this past weekend, you know.
If he wins another major, how long till the next to the movie?
Oh, man.
You know, my God. That happened. It's in the looks. I mean, that is, America loves redemption stories probably just as much as they love Tiger.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the perfect combination, bro. But like, you know, something would bother me about how the 2008 U.S. Open.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care. I do not care, man, if Tiger Woods wins his next major in the year 2030. I do not care. Like, at how fucking spectacular and damn near impossible that would be in and of itself. I do not care. The climax and the single most incredible thing Tiger Woods has and ever will do in his life is winning that fucking U.S. Open on literally one leg and playing 90 holes. People need to remember, there is no one-hole playoff in the U.S. Open. There is no three-hole playoff in the U.S. Open. If you are tied after 72 holes, you got to fucking come back tomorrow and play 18 again. And he played 90 holes on an ACL that wasn't there, and he still won. Like that, he will never ever do anything greater than that. Like, dude, it will forever be with me, and it will forever resonate with me as like literally one of the most spectacular things I've ever witnessed, ever.
Would it be wrong to say, like, I wish he would have
withdrawn like from that particular US Open?
Yeah.
A little bit. I mean, you know, he proved he could have won the tournament. But yeah, no, okay. That does make a little bit of sense, because when you put it into perspective, like, how long could he possibly have pushed himself farther out due to injury because of that?
I mean, yeah, you're talking, you had that knee and then it turned into a back because, you know, your body starts to overcompensate when you're hurt, and it's, you kind of look at it and you're like, wow, what if he pulled out?
Dude, so I can share my screen on this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, we're going to take a look at this.
Rocco stepping in quickly here. Third to the par.
Yeah, I'm going to play it out loud.
Five.
All right, so I can share my screen. Cool. All right. See it?
Yep.
What is that? Is that doing that on yours?
Yeah.
What is that? Okay, cool. Oh, wait. How about, what do you see now? You see the,
I mean,
you got it?
Here.
Am I good?
Yep.
Cool. Is this going to screw up royally? No one wants to see Rocco. Come on. Yeah, this isn't going to work. That was a fun idea, but it's not going to work. Like I was trying to really particularly take a look at when he grimaced, like when he was grimacing on multiple
different holes and so clearly showing how much agonizing pain he was in.
I mean, his swing wasn't built to last. I mean, it's way too violent. He's got so much torque in it, but it's also why it makes him great. Like, he's not one of those methodical, you know, guys that have the body, the strong. Like, he was a big guy at one point. I remember. Like, that, I think it was a ESPN The Magazine cover where he just looked yoked. But he looks human. He's looked human for the last 10 years is what he has.
Dude, like, I'm glad. That really all I've come out of it is like, you know, if you've probably got some hate in your heart, to be honest with you, if you're like truly like pissed that Tiger didn't win just with all those circumstances, man, to be honest with you. But kind of switching gears, you know, and just because, you know, I had very little time to prepare for this podcast in particular, but I said to you before we started doing this, like, if there are two guys that are going to be able to keep consistent conversation about sports no matter what's going on, it's you and I. And I didn't have time to start to put this into motion. So, like, you know how, like, me and my friend's favorite, like, phrase or whatever to say is no one has ever said? And, yeah. Like, lead into that. Dude, I'm about to turn that into a segment, to be honest with you. Sports no one has ever said. Like, dude, I could literally go with, like, 100 like just thinking about it too. No one has ever said Jordan Spieth should take his hat off. He looks much better that way.
Oh gosh. It's the Jordan Spieth. Isn't that your guy too?
I like Spieth. I mean, he's not like really my guy. Have you ever seen that dude when he takes his hat off, bro? You're just like, oh, that's a good look. What the fuck is that? You're like, why is his hair like that? Like,
peak, bro.
Dude, like, for real. I remember, like, when he was coming up and stuff, and he's just like, dude, this kid's young, this kid's good, this kid's confident, and this kid's balding. Okay, what the hell?
Hairlines are a sacred thing.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Like, dude, that would be literally like with me and a co-host that would have ample time to like take a couple of days to like prepare like five really good ones each. It'd be hilarious. Like, dude, no one has ever said someone should get that Floyd Mayweather guy off the stage. He's not saying anything to hype this fight. And no one has ever said, I miss when LeBron wore headbands. What's up?
Pull up George, and I want you to just pull him up. Do the same. All right.
Pull up who?
Jordan Spieth. You know how you have a real blurb of information about somebody on Google?
Yeah.
So I see Michael Greller, and I'm like, what? Michael Greller? Like thinking like, oh, that's like a spouse line, and I'm like zooming in like, wait, what? It was just his caddy.
His caddy?
Yeah. I was like, wait, what?
I'm weak, man. dude, like, caddies are so important in golf. Like, can we stop and realize that, like, Tiger has not only not won a major in 10 years, like, because of everything that's happened to him, bro. He has not won a major since he switched caddies from Stevie Williams.
You're right.
He hasn't won one, you know, to nobody's surprise.
I mean, I definitely would put it towards that losing his entire knee, but
of course,
I agree. I can completely agree with that one as well.
It would obviously be so epic. The day that he ends up winning one,
I think we'll see it very soon.
Very, very soon, dude. So going back to what you were saying earlier, how much summer league did you watch? Talk to me about some NBA. Like, what?
I spent a lot of time in the NBA this year. I feel like, I mean, I love basketball.
Of course.
I think seeing how well the NBA is shaped into, I mean, you can understand why it's the second most popular sport in the world now. Clearly, without a doubt.
Become basketball as a whole?
Yes.
Yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah.
But man, like, you start to watch it, and I'm, like, looking at these guys, like, all right, well, it started off with seeing, what's that kid out of Missouri's name? Michael, what is his name? Out of Missouri. He's drafted by Denver. What's his name? Oh, why is it escaping me? Help me here.
Rookie from Denver?
Yeah, he, out of Missouri.
Missouri. Oh, Michael Porter Jr.
Porter Jr., yeah. Seeing him go down with that back injury was just a sigh of a relief, and also kind of like you just feel really bad because, you know, I was expecting the Knicks to take him. But, man, DeAndre Ayton was such a disappointment. He just looked like he hasn't improved, and that's what was kind of upsetting for me as a, you know, just a fan in general. Like, you see a guy that's just bigger than everybody, and he's just not doing anything. I mean, the other big takeaway was, like, Jaren Jackson looked amazing. Like, absolutely just great.
Is Jaren Jackson, or isn't Jaren Jackson, literally a walking, talking, breathing depiction of Memphis Grizzlies basketball even before he got drafted?
Oh, yeah. Just punch you in the face. Like, literally. And who else is Trae Young looked disappointing, but what's his name out of Orlando?
Out of Orlando.
They drafted him last year. He was hurt all year.
I gotta tell you, man, like, you know me, I could usually just be like bang off the top of my head, but my brain is,
you're telling me, man,
my brain is, you know,
he's 10-hour work day. What's his name? I'm pulling it up right now. Isaac, Jonathan Isaac.
Dude. Yeah, from Florida State.
All right. I say dark horse rookie of the year winner right there, Jonathan Isaac. That's my hot take right there.
Well, didn't he play in games this year?
He didn't play. I'm pretty sure he was out the whole year or the majority of the year, enough to not classify as a rookie.
Yeah, I forget how many games that is. The NBA loves doing that. That happens all the time.
He played 27 games. I mean,
yeah, I think that's too many, to be honest with you.
That's unfortunate. I see, that's not okay. I think if you're under, I'd say the third mark, you should be all right. But
I don't know. Dude, there was controversy with Ben Simmons even being a rookie, you know, and Donovan Mitchell had his thing about that. And what I could say about Donovan Mitchell too is, like, dude, Donovan Mitchell, that should not have come out of nowhere for a lot of people. I mean, he was the MVP of the summer league last year.
Yeah, Ben Simmons wasn't a rookie.
Also, wait, so now guys that don't play games aren't rookies, but guys that play 27 games should still be
rookies. They're still a rookie.
I think I know what sense you're saying that from, though. And, like, dog, it's going to be very hard for you to travel far and wide on this planet and find someone that literally loves Ben Simmons more than I do. Like, dude, I fucking – when he came into the league, And if I had to put on, if I had to put on my NBA draft and scout hat and make my, like, the bottom line type of ceiling for this guy's career, I would have easily said without flinching that if developed the right way and given the perfect coach, there's no reason this guy has there's no reason this guy cannot end up on basketball's Mount Rushmore when he retires. I mean, literally the talent that he has is it's LeBron-esque, honestly, with a less developed jump shot, to be honest with you.
See, that's kind of where I differ. I paint him. I look at him. He's a Jason Kidd to me. Like, that's who he is. I mean, Jason Kidd's, I think his, I mean, right now, I mean, if Jason Kidd is his floor, like, I mean, listen, like,
dude,
if your floor is Jason Kidd, then you're going to be all right.
I mean, hell yeah, bro. And Jason Kidd, like, you know, he may do with a lot of physical disadvantages and lack of those contrary advantages. And dude, I mean, such a solid guy. Kind of a mediocre rap as a coach, though. You think he ever gets a head job again?
No. I mean, he's going to suffer from same thing that Jackson suffers from. Just having a bad rapport with the front office can really, really hurt your chances as a ever having a job again. I mean, that's kind of my, I guess, assessment of that is that it comes down to the fact that I think the Bucks should have been way better than they were. The Bucks had a lot of talent and he squandered it.
Yeah.
He had a situation in Brooklyn, let's be frank, but he had all the potential in the world in Milwaukee.
But can we just admire the fact that Jason Kidd thought he was slick and literally held his water cup out in the air while clearly mouthing on an NBA floor where there's 80,000 cameras pointed at him, "Hit me," and thought no one would notice.
He does not care.
Like, he literally thought he would finesse.
I'm baffled.
I remember being so baffled when it happened because that was my biggest takeaway. I was like, "Dog, did he like really think no one would notice though? Like, did he really think he'd just be able to get away with that?"
Yeah, I mean, when you're a legend, I guess it's sort of like the Larry Bird drinking stories, you know, where don't care.
Oh my god, I am
great. I am top 10 point guards all time.
Dude, speaking of Larry Bird, you remember my friend Megan?
Yes.
Did I ever tell you the story about the time that she hung out with because I guess like one of like her friends a couple of years ago knew Larry Bird's son, I guess. And so Megan finds herself one night watching the Big Ten tournament at Bankers Life in the owner's box, in Larry Bird's box. She didn't know who Larry Bird was, right? Hold up. I'm going to see if I can pull up the exact tweet because I have a feeling I can. There's like a way you can search on Twitter and pull up an exact tweet. Okay, let's see here.
You know, I think my favorite stories, NBA stories, are Larry Bird stories, like about players. Like, I think I was reading one, I was listening to one video, and it was somebody talking about like how when he first came into the league, people were talking mess to him because they were like, "Oh man, you let that white boy rebound on you," and then he gets he's like, "Yo, he gets up, man."
Bro, like, okay, hold up, I got it. Megan, okay, so, because, like, I could tell you the gist of it, and it would be just as funny, but, like, I got to read the exact thing. All right. Fuck yeah, I got it. I he literally said, I don't know who this Larry Bird guy is, but I'm in his penthouse at the Pacers Arena right now. And I tweeted back at her. And I'm just like, I said, bro, what did you just say? Question mark. He's like, I don't know him, but he's ugly.
You respect Big Bird.
That man is ugly, though. That man is ugly as shit. What do you mean, bro?
But he rich.
Yes, true. True. How good of it, dude? Like, LeBron has so much money as it is right now. Could he own an NFL and NBA team at the same time?
I don't think he aspires to continue walking in Jordan's footsteps.
I agree with you. However, no one's going to remember Michael Jordan's legacy as an owner, you know? Like, there are a handful of owners in all of professional sports that have names that carry weight. Jerry Jones, the Rooney family. The Steinbrenners. Like, you know what I'm saying? No one's going to remember Michael Jordan as an owner. And plus, I've read and seen in interviews before that, like, those things do interest LeBron.
I think public office might interest him more.
You think he would have a shot at winning, though? And that's not me asking you that question on a sense that, like, I would completely discount that. I'm asking your personal opinion.
It would really depend on how dirty he wants to get. But based on how he carries himself and his thoughts, I think he's a golden guy. If I'm the Democratic National Committee and I'm sitting there looking around for potential governors, senators, you got a guy who, A, is filthy rich, has a lot of means of campaign, like raising funds. He's got the squeakiest clean image that anyone could possibly have. And the guy wins.
Yeah.
He walks the walk and he talks it. I look at that and I'm like, wow, like for all his on the court, whatever, that guy is a one of a kind human being. And I love to wake up every day and see what he does and appreciate it because it's incredible.
I wish more people had that mindset, man. Like, because, like, why do we as sports fans in America have to fucking watch legends be legends, literally do what they do to deserve the status of being a legend, like a legend, bro? And why is it that the phrase, oh, that's one of those guys that we're going to really miss when he retires. Why? Appreciate him now. I hate to call out my boy like this, but like Tino, I know you're probably listening to this because Tino, dude, Tino and I are really good friends and he's come on the podcast multiple times and I listen to all of his. You should subscribe to his, man, because dude, Tino's a riot, bro. He literally said on the record too, on my podcast, that he wants literally. And honestly, I don't know if it's the Laker fan in him that says it, but like he said that he wishes no good fortune on anything LeBron related, and could honestly care less. I don't remember all of this was his exact wording, but it was of like the nature of he could care less if having LeBron, you know, brought him to the playoffs and out of the bottom of the Western Conference.
I mean, that's because he still got the Warriors couple, you know, 100 miles south.
Yeah, I mean...
like, let's be real.
Dude, I mean, I guess. Isn't that sad that, like, you know, people can't even get excited about their favorite teams in the NBA getting big pickups anymore because the question that always will haunt you at the end of the day is, are you going to beat the Warriors, though? And every single team's answer is no. No, you're not.
I... Listen, I've been a miserable, sulking Knicks fan for the majority of my life. I enjoy watching good basketball, and the Warriors play good basketball. Houston got worse. And
Interesting. Ariza's departure and
Bamute.
Yeah, true. And signing of Carmelo.
I think he'd be a spark plug if he plays off the bench, but that's yet to be seen.
Yeah, that's not gonna happen. He's gonna be in the starting lineup and he's gonna fuck things up. We've already seen it happen,
I think the biggest thing when it comes to LeBron for me is that I love seeing games where it's not that I root for LeBron to lose. It's that I root for teams to push him because he always rises to the occasion. Even if he doesn't win, that man puts his best foot forward. And I think it's absolutely just something to marvel at. Like the Pacers series was one of the most fun series I think I've watched in years. Like it's.
Oh, you mean like. Oh, this year? Yeah, dude.
He's incredible. And I think basketball is going to be more fun this year than last because I think there is a little bit more balance. Although we all know, where Bowser's lurking at the end of the day.
Who's lurking? Bowser. Oh. But, yeah. To answer this question, though, because I've had a wide array of responses whenever I say this and people really put this thought into perspective. So effectively erase the memory, any memory you have of LeBron James and Anthony Davis existing. Those two people don't exist. No LeBron James, no Anthony Davis. Is a starting five of Steph Curry, and they're not going to have it all season, obviously, because DeMarcus can't come back to like January. Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant, Draymond Green, DeMarcus Cousins. Would that starting five put on a Golden State uniform 1 month and turn around 2 months later and be the same starting five putting on a United States basketball jersey? Would that be the starting five of the U.S. men's national team if you have no LeBron, no Anthony Davis? Dude, I mean...
So we're just talking about what Clay is.
I think Clay is the shooting guard. I mean, who are you going to start over him at the two? Kawhi, maybe?
No, I think Kawhi plays the three.
Where do you put KD?
The four.
Okay, I didn't have Draymond come off the bench. I could see it.
Yeah, realistic. I mean, Draymond, I think is. I don't think Draymond gets enough credit if we're talking.
Oh, my God. God, hell no.
I get so mad. Because everybody loves to be a basketball analyst.
Quickly here, third to the right. Bar, five.
But they don't sit there and really take into account what this man does. I mean, you ever watch him sit there and call out plays and just, it's like, what? Look at him.
You know what I've said about Draymond for years, man? And I love how you bring up earlier, how the guy that caught your eye this summer, Jaren Jackson, what do they both have in common? They have a Tom Izzo degree in basketball from Michigan State University. By no stretch of the imagination am I sitting here and telling you that Tom Izzo is an NBA machine churning talent factory, because that would just be blatantly false. However, certain guys in that system, in Tom Izzo's very provocative and incredibly reliant on communication and defensive awareness, guys that really fit that system and aren't like Miles Bridges, because Miles Bridges didn't fit that system. Miles Bridges went to Michigan State because he was as talented as he was. Guys like Draymond, though, are so many light years ahead of other guys in terms of basketball IQ that some of these things just come naturally, man. Like, some of the ways that he is able to not only position himself perfectly on defense, but really help his teammates around him like on defense particularly, dude, I agree with you 100%. He does not get the credit he deserves, not even close.
To bounce off what you just said and kind of flip it, right? Yeah. Now, talking basketball factories, do you question Calipari? I mean, yeah, he's great at bringing in talent, but when you see guys like Kevin Knox, when you see guys like...
What about Kevin Knox, though? He's a Knick. I need to know what you think about Kevin Knox, and then I'll tell you what I think about Calipari.
I think he has the potential to be a better shooter than... I think he has potential to be a better shooter than Tatum. Very like Tatum. It's not going to move as well, but he's going to be a solid player. I'd say average 15 to 17 career. I think athletically, I'm not going to say all NBA. I'm not going to say all-star. However, the kind of guy that you want on your team because he gets buckets and he's athletic. And he is, I think, he fits the mold of the modern NBA player, 100%. But with that said, I think when you look at guys that have been coming out of Calipari's system, they've wildly underperformed in college. And then they come to the NBA and they're like marketable players. And, you know, is that to his fault or his system's fault that he's not showing the best of his players? Or is he cycling towards one specific guy, typically your power forward center, to carry his team and not focusing on these other guys that are mixing in and making the team work? I'm curious.
Yeah. I certainly didn't believe that Kevin Knox deserved to be booed when he was drafted, to be honest with you. I mean, you know, and Kristaps was booed. We got to remember that.
I want to pull up my tweets from that day.
Oh, dude. I think a lot of people were off about Kristaps. So, I mean, remembering for me, I mean, like, to be honest with you, and I watch a lot of tape and I see a lot of film and things happen, you know, in my daily life that revolve around sports. That somebody that would consider themselves a casual sports fan would never imagine doing. However, I was incredibly ignorant on what to make of Kristaps Porzingis as far as his ceiling in the NBA. But what I will say is I never ever remember a time where I like saw what I did see about him and say, oh, this guy's going to suck. Not once.
I was high on Kristaps.
I bet you were, man. I mean, it doesn't surprise me.
No, I just like to be disagreeable. I agree, though. The draft is a gamble. It's a lot. It is what it is. It's a lottery. But there's no way for the casual, let alone your pundits, to be able to be 100% on about these prospects if guys who are getting paid millions of dollars to run organizations can't even pick them right.
Dude, man, that's one of them. Dude, I consistently and constantly hold you to the standard of, you know, man, like, you're one of the most intelligent dudes I've ever met. And like, that was one of the smartest things you've ever said. I completely agree with that. But get back on the topic of Calipari for me and ask that, you know, again, how you and I can go on shit. Ask me what you asked me about Calipari again.
Is he like, I really think he's awesome at talent evaluation, but is he really focusing on player development? Or is he focusing on winning and getting these guys to fit a system that he's constructing rather than building a system around the players he's recruiting? Because I think Devin Booker is the biggest exclamation point to that point of like, this guy was a good player, all right, player at college, you know. Then you see him come to the NBA, and I mean, he's just signing he's finding a max deal at 21 years old. I mean, at what point did Calipari sit there and think, oh yeah, I got a future all-star right here. You know, I got an all-NBA player on this roster. But he wasn't using it. I mean, granted, yeah, you have Karl Anthony Towns, but I think if you're looking at the trajectory of their careers right now, I see one trending upward and one going straight down.
Okay, so here's what I'll say about Calipari. You know, like, John Calipari,
And I'm pulling up a specific name that I need to remember, because I have had reserved feelings in the past, specifically about how I felt about Calipari. Man, like, okay. As soon as I remember this name, I will be able to do this. Wait, NBA players. I can't believe I don't remember this guy's name. I'm telling you, man. Brain has slowed down today. Because Calipari's put so many guys in the NBA, and while I try to remember, here we go. All right. Okay. Yes. All right. DeJuan Wagner, 2002, Memphis. Small point guard, undersized, but like per se Kevin Knox, man, he just knew how to put the ball in the bucket. This was way back before the one-and-done thing was even, you know, a thing. Guys were still coming out early, though, but the one-and-done thing wasn't happening. If you were one-and-done quality, you were either being told by scouts, tough luck, go to college, or you had the talent of LeBron and came straight out of high school. DeJuan Wagner, I hope that this is the right person I'm thinking of. I'm pretty sure it is. DeJuan Wagner was so talented, and he got the short end of the stick due to injuries and could have declared a little bit early. And Calipari knew where his future in the NBA lied. And what forever cemented for me the respect I have for John Calipari and the complete disregard for who, to be honest with you, I have no time for Calipari slander, to be honest with you. I don't. And this story is a large reason why. Wagner said he walked into Calipari's office when they were doing exit meetings, right?
You told me this story before. I know it.
The exit interviews that they do in Calipari and really all around college basketball and college football, you can really sit down and get to the nitty gritty in exit interviews in college basketball, because you got 12 guys on scholarship and you got walk-ons that you'll be like, all right, thinking about walking on again next year. All right, cool. See you then. But then you got your scholarship guys. It's a lot of times it's less than 12. So you can go in depth with what will be the best for their future. You can spend a lot of time balancing things off of them. And a coach in a particular program as prestigious as like a Kentucky could all day sit there and shoot bullshit at this player that they know is NBA ready's face and try to give them a bunch of reasons why they need to come back and try to tell them why it might not be a good idea. You know what Calipari did? Do you remember what I told you John Calipari did when DeJuan Wagner came in to that exit interview?
He said stay in school, essentially.
Dog, he took the man's scholarship and ripped it in half. He said, you are ready to go to the NBA. You don't need me anymore. The balls in that man's pants. He ripped his scholarship in two. That's a coach that cares about his players, man. For real.
What wound up happening to Wagner?
He had, I believe it was chronic. He had chronic knee problems. I'm looking it up. Okay. DeJuan Wagner. What's up? Yeah.
Wasn't he involved? I think I know. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, and he got drafted by the Cavs. I remember. Yeah. Averaged 13 a game as a rookie and then, yeah, you know, moved on. Blah, blah, blah. Dude, can you give some credit to my Red Sox, please? I'm not rubbing it in your face at all. I'm really not, because the Red Sox could be one game in front of the Yankees, and like this conversation would not be having it. We would not be having. And I don't care if it was the Rays, dog.
They're good.
The Red Sox are 85-35.
They are playing at an incredible pace. I will not discount. They have potentially three MVPs in that lineup. Okay.
Yeah.
However, in the playoffs, they cannot out. I mean, the Yankees can out hit the Red Sox. The Red Sox can out hit the Yankees. Neither can out pitch each other. Houston can out pitch everyone. And that's where it comes down to. Can you pound for pound come out and out hit their pitching? Maybe.
Potentially. I mean, probably not though. Like when these guys are hitting at the levels that they are capable of, especially the Yankees, to be honest with you, because I mean, sure, the Red Sox have formidable lineups that have obviously put formidable lineup that has put them in the position to be 50 games over 500 before mid August.
Against the hard schedule post.
But the Yankees lineup is a little bit more scary, to be honest with you, because of the pop in the bats that they have in the heart of it. And again, like I said earlier, it's hard to come back from being down 8 touchdowns going into the fourth quarter. But if there are any teams in baseball right now that I would never count out of a game down several runs, it's a team like the Yankees that have the pop in the bats that they have.
I think the Yankees' detriment right now is their starters.
100%.
Marino doesn't look good right now. He hasn't looked good since the break. He just looks tired. Like, he hit that midseason lag where, you know, a lot of starters just kind of hit that wall. He's 24 years old. I mean, I'm not worried, you know. But, you know, he's tired. CC's look great. And the Red Sox just, I mean, my God. I mean, listen. You've heard me for years go on about the fact that Mookie Betts deserved to win the MVP 2 years ago. I might be the only person in this tri-state area who will stand the side of Mookie Betts.
Yeah.
For that against Trout, but
he was so good.
He, if there's one player, like, I hate the Red Sox. I hate the Red Sox with a burning passion. But when I watch Mookie Betts play, I look there and I'm like, my God, I get to see Willie Mays play right now. Like, that's like, I mean, like, I don't know if you can compare him to any other player. He's not a big guy. That's what blows my mind. He's not a big guy. He's 5'9", 160 pounds. And then he's hitting for average too on top of power. I marvel at Mookie Betts. And shout out to Dombrowski on that one.
Yeah, I mean, dude, Dombrowski has been good for us since we've got him. Like, really good. And let me praise the acquisition of Nathan Eovaldi at the trade deadline, man. That is an acquisition that was overlooked egregiously at the time, and I knew it was going to be great.
Yankee fans, that hurt.
Dude, oh my God. Got about probably 10 or so-ish minutes of time left. Football's almost back, dude. Like, you said it earlier, bro. We're in the dog days of almost nothing. Football is so close, bro. I can taste it.
So, did you watch the first episode of Hard Knocks?
You know what? To be honest with you, I've never been that avid of a watcher of Hard Knocks. This season piqued my interest a little bit, obviously because of Baker Mayfield and the Cleveland Browns. And I will not totally discount me going back and watching it, being that I do have access to HBO. However, if I never get around to it, I wouldn't be surprised either. I've never been a big Hard Knocks.
I know. Because it always makes you a fan of some rando that, like, almost made the team, because you kind of get, like, an emotional connection. Like, Chris Hogan, when he was with the Dolphins a few years back.
Yeah.
Blow up with the Patriots. But I was listening to an interview with Mike Lombardi, and it was Titus Young and Tate Frazier and Mike Lombardi. But you need to listen to it, because Mike Lombardi just lambasted Hugh Jackson and that coaching staff after that Hard Knocks episode. Like, one thing you notice about that episode is that I think that looking at the Browns last year, they had the talent, they had the schedule, and they played the games. They could have been a team that easily could have been 6-10 with the right coaching. The Browns were not 0-16 bad. And I think this year they have the chance to be 8-8, maybe. Maybe.
Oh, man, I think that's optimistic.
I don't know, man. That division is terrible.
It's top heavy.
It's this.
I think the Ravens could be okay.
I don't know. Big Ben's playing on one leg, and Joe Flacco's a minute from being released. I mean,
in favor of Lamar Jackson taking over? You serious?
They only took him because they knew he should have been gone 10 picks earlier. I mean,
yeah. I mean, when you trade up to get the last pick in the first round, I mean, it's the last pick in the first round is like second rounder. I mean, you're only one pick away from it.
Yeah. It also shows when a team really, really likes somebody that they know that he's not going to be there much longer. And that's the one guy who should not have been there. Like Landon Collins, you look at the last pick of the draft. Generally, that's a really good player. Usually. I mean,
Mr. Irrelevant, you mean, or the last pick of the first round?
The first round. Like, it's a really, really good guy who comes out of there who is generally overlooked. I think Lamar Jackson's special, and I think that he could have been a top five pick given the right circumstances. I think what happened to him was just terrible, and I think he's going to take hold of that offense at some point. Not this year, maybe in a few years, but with that said, the Bengals are garbage.
Yeah, they're terrible.
I think the Browns have a legitimate chance to be a reasonably good team this year, as long as Hugh Jackson does his job. Because I guarantee you this, that if he does not at least go 7-9 this year, if he doesn't pull a Jeff Fisher, he's fired.
I think that's a 6-10 team at best, to be honest with you. I think they're on their way. I think that they're doing things right, but we mustn't forget, my friend. We must never forget, as if this were a national tragedy, because in some senses, bro, it is a national tragedy that these guys that work in that front office at the trade deadline last year did not acquire AJ McCarron when they traded for him because they missed the deadline high-fiving in a room. We're not even a year removed from that, bro. That shit still gets me so weak to this day. Like,
I'm Dorsey.
Dog, could you imagine? Put this into perspective, right? Like, let's say that there's a solid chance that women out there that marry guys that are general managers and front office people in sports, chances are the women that they marry know things about sports. So picture you being a part of that room, and you come home to your wife, and you look down, you look sad. She's like, "Honey, what's wrong?" It's like, it's a rough day at work. Like, looking on the ground, you don't want to talk about it. And she's like, "What happened?" She's like, "Well, we kind of botched this trade." And she's like, "Oh, well, did you guys make a trade that, you know, ended up not being what you wanted?" And he's like, "Not exactly. we traded for AJ McCarron." She's like, "Well, okay, did you not want him?" He's like, "No, we were all high-fiving after after it happened." It's like, so what's the problem? We didn't send the fax in time. probably look at she'd probably look at you like, you didn't send the what? Because you were high-fiving? That's one of the most comical stories I've ever heard in sports, bro. I was almost in tears when I heard that for the first time.
See, it's got to be dysfunctional when something like that gets out. Like, imagine the Bengals where they're sitting there like, so, you coming? Wait, what do you mean?
Right, and they have no idea about the high-five fest that's preventing it.
You're upset. The team that didn't get the Browns draft pick?
Dog, like, but no, what wraps it all in this perfect bundle is that, okay, if you're going to have a high-five clinic over you know, dude, have a high-five clinic over someone that's won a start in the NFL first, bro. Like, what's up? Hey, dude, he looked phenomenal.
He looked great. So did Baker. But, I mean,
I don't think the stats totally tell the story of, like, how well Baker played as a field general. You know what I'm saying? Like, he converted every single third and fourth down conversion. All of them.
I really want to like Baker, but my reservations stem from people overlooking Lamar Jackson, who had very, very similar numbers to Baker.
Yeah. It's hard to compare numbers in college football, man. Like, it is, because it's not like the NFL, where the NFL, the stats in the NFL and why fantasy football works in the NFL is because the professionalism and integrity of how close, you know, professional teams are, you know, and how spreads, even when it's the best team playing the worst team, very rarely stretch beyond three touchdowns. But you see some of these spreads in college football, like teams like minus 49, like minus 50 and a half. And that's because college football is so adaptable offense to offense, particularly. And for example, there was a conversation on Twitter between two of my friends, where one guy was saying that Denard Robinson was the better quarterback in college than Braxton Miller was.
I saw this.
Yeah, what do you think about that?
I think that I'm gonna kick the door down. It's kind of like the
in favor of Braxton, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Robinson, obviously, I'll watch the Bernard Robinson play. You know, I wish I could go back and watch him play. It was so fun to watch. But,
right.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't want this. I want this on the record that Baker Mayfield's going to be a star. I mean, anybody who comes out there, because I know, you know, all you the rabid Ohio fans out there are going to neck. No, he's going to be a star. Anybody who walks onto a football field, grinds it out, is willing to lose a year of eligibility to prove that they have a chance.
Like, dog, this man walked up to Bob Stoops when he transferred to Oklahoma. They literally didn't tell them he was coming. Granted, this was also a month after Trevor Knight just threw 34 out of 39 passes for 450 yards and four touchdowns against fucking Alabama in the Sugar Bowl to beat them by double digits. And this man, Baker Mayfield, walked up to Bob Stoops unannounced, said, "What's up, Coach Stoops? I'm your future quarterback, Baker Mayfield. Where can you and I talk about me walking on?" He was like, hold up. He's like, you're coming here? Since when? Because people forget, man. He was Big 12 Freshman of the Year at Texas Tech.
I wonder, like, what that says about, like, a guy like that. That's like when you go to a car dealership and you're talking to a guy and, you know, he's like, "Oh, yeah, I'm just looking around." He's like, "Oh, yeah, that's cool." That's what the last guy who just drove off his new car said to me. Like,
oh, my God. I mean,
you're just like, okay. All right.
Dog, I'm gonna pull up this interview, like this shit 30-second clip of an interview I need to show you on the topic of why Baker Mayfield is that type of guy. Some guys, man, like literally have just this massive chip that they wear around on their shoulder like a badge. And I've come to notice that those guys, more often than not, even if like you become like the greatest at what you do, if you walk around like you have some sort of huge chip on your shoulder, those guys are the guys that succeed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and guys with supreme confidence as well. I want you to listen to this 30-second clip. Next UFC pay-per-view is a guy named Darren Till, who's the next big star out of the UK, right? Listen to the fucking words that come out of this guy's mouth about someone asked him about being away from his family for this camp because he's getting his shot to win the welterweight title. Listen what this man says.
Got a girlfriend. You hear it?
You hear that?
Mm-hmm.
All right, listen.
You know, I've got a girlfriend who's 7 months pregnant. I don't really care.
Pause. Man said, I got a girlfriend that's 7 months pregnant. I don't really care. Continuing.
I've got a daughter in Brazil right now who I haven't seen for 1 year. I don't really care. I
just got a daughter he hasn't seen for 1 year. He doesn't really care. He doesn't care.
In Brazil?
What's up?
In Brazil?
Yeah, he hasn't seen it over a year. He doesn't care.
It's about legacy and greatness. That's what I'm in this for. I'm not in this to make money, be a champion, leave. I'm in this for people to say at the end of it, you were the greatest. That's my only mentality. Fuck money and fuck everything else.
You were the greatest. Fuck it.
Man said, only thing I'm interested in is being the greatest. Fuck money. Fuck everything else. And so I'm picking him to win on that day. Literally right after I heard that interview, I was like, yep, okay. He's winning. He's winning that belt. Like,
is that the line of I want people talking, or I'm really that good?
Dog, he really is. He's the real deal. But, like, I mean, that's also, like, a guy that – could you imagine being that laser-focused on something?
Fucking the best.
7 months pregnant. I don't really care.
Oh, man.
He's McGregor-esque. He's McGregor-esque a little bit. He's the first guy since McGregor that, like, says all this bold shit and says all of these things that sound crazy. But when I hear him say it, I'm like, okay, yeah, I believe that guy. McGregor was the first, though.
Think McGregor's gonna come back, or
bro? Yeah, it was just announced last week, made official. UFC 229, October 6th.
MSG?
No, there have been rumors floating around. That's UFC 230. They still need a main event. Nate Diaz is back at MSG though.
I mean, I would love to go, but that should be so expensive, man.
Well, yeah, it would be. The tickets are going to be probably a little less expensive this year because, like I've told you, or like I told you when we were talking about it, they took 3 title fights in both of their first 2 trips to MSG. Nate Diaz versus Dustin Poirier is the co-main event, which effectively seals the deal that there will only be 1 title fight. However, though, a Nate Diaz fight is just as big, if not bigger, than a title fight, to be honest with you. Nate Diaz is huge, man.
Yeah, he wears steel balls in his gloves for sure.
But yeah, Connor's coming back in October against Khabib, 26-0, never lost a round. It's going to be the biggest UFC pay-per-view of all time.
You think so? Well, yeah. After Connor's, like, I mean, after that fight, he's just... He basically died. I think that fight was metaphorically the death of boxing.
Oh, that's interesting. Why do you say that though?
Because it showed just how far boxing will go to grab you, but also showed just how silly it's become at this point.
Dude, boxing is so silly.
And that it had to snag the biggest star in you know, fighting, just to get a headline, and then it killed itself right then and there. That was, I think, boxing is dead. I mean, we had bare knuckle boxing like 3 weeks ago.
That shit was so crazy.
Thing, do you see that guy come out with the pitching pro and just like,
dog, it's back in 2 weeks.
listen, like, boxing is dead, and UFC has officially assumed the helm of it. It is the pay-per-view sport now. And
yeah. Well, I mean, of course. I mean, with Mo Mayweather, who's going to even sell half of what they did? I mean, you know.
Watch them lose. That was it.
Yeah, bro. Yeah, that's very true. But there is no king of pay-per-view right now in boxing because there are no pay-per-views. There's going to be one pay-per-view by the end of this year, and that's Canelo Triple G2 in a month and 2 days.
Which will be probably the last big fight because...
For a while, man.
Yeah, but
for a while. Boxing needs new stars, and the UFC needs new stars too, to be honest with you. I mean, all of their biggest stars, all of them, with the exception of two, are all on the shelf. Saint Pierre is, you know, no one knows what's up with Saint Pierre. Ronda's gone. John Jones is suspended. And of course you have Brock Lesnar coming back at the beginning of next year. If he can, by some sort of miracle, pass all of his steroids tests until then, which I'm not buying.
I mean, that's a scary thought of him and Cormier.
Cormier's gonna knock him out.
You think so?
Yes, I do.
There's such a size difference there.
Yeah, I mean, there was a size difference between Cormier and Miocic too. And, like, you know, I wasn't really high on Cormier going into his fight with Stipe a couple months ago. And just to put it into perspective, man, Stipe Miocic is the longest reigning heavyweight champion ever. Defended the heavyweight belt more times than ever. Held almost every advantage against DC outside of wrestling and cardio. And DC knocked him out in the first round. DC fucking knocked him clean out in the first round. And then you got to remember, for those that are statistically aware of it, DC is undefeated at heavyweight, undefeated against guys not named John Jones. Because John Jones is a completely, you know, otherworldly.
That entire thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And Chandler Jones, all those guys. And, all I see with Brock is a guy that hasn't, on the record, he won his fight in 2016, but it was revoked after he pissed hot. Hasn't on paper won a fight in 6 years. Yeah, I don't see how he beats Cormier, and man, that chin is testy. Cormier's gonna knock him out.
Cormier is in my Hall of Fame for guys who probably shouldn't be athletes but are incredible because they somehow are. Like, you know, up there with your Prince Fielders and your Pablo Sandovals.
Bartolo Colon.
Colon, Big Baby Davis, those guys who are like, how is this guy in shape?
Bartolo Colon is ugly as fuck, bro.
You know what? You got Cy Young, though.
I don't care, man. That guy is ugly as hell. Like, dude.
What if Lesnar catches him?
Lesnar's not gonna catch Cormier. I mean, Lesnar doesn't have hands.
Yeah, but he's got
size.
Worst of 12 men.
Yeah. That's all he has on Cormier's size. And Cormier's been outsized in almost every fight of his career, whether it's been at heavyweight or light heavyweight, and you know. He's undefeated against guys not named John Jones. He's never fought a guy as big as Brock, though. I mean, a lot of guys have not ever fought guys as big as Brock. But the difference about it all is, too, is if Brock is really going to come into that fight clean, if he is really and truly going to come into that fight with nothing banned in his system, that's going to affect his body.
I mean, I've come around with steroids because these guys aren't looking to be massive behemoths. They're looking this the same. Granted, if you've watched Brock Lesnar's pictures throughout his life, all right, that's a different story. But I think it's injuries, man. Like, you look, steroids generally coincide with injuries because people want to get healthy. They want to get on the right track. I don't think he's using it to be better, but it's hard to stay healthy. Like, that man is, you're talking NFL to WWE to UFC. That man has taken the beating of all beatings, and you see every day another, you know, former wrestler or football player goes out and commits suicide.
Yeah.
Eating that he has taken throughout his life. I wouldn't be surprised if he has to use steroids to even freaking get out of bed in the morning.
Dude, I know, man. Yeah. It's sad. I think I got to skip, to be honest with you. I got a couple of articles to post. I don't know exactly how much time. Probably hovering around an hour and a half or more, man. You know, I appreciate it, bro. And obviously, you reminded me. I don't know how I went 31 episodes into this without having you on once. That's a mistake I will not make again.
Misshapen work schedules, my guy. I appreciate you having me on. It's always a pleasure.
Absolutely, bro. And once you begin to get the wheels turning on the idea that you had for your podcast, bro, let me know.
Hey, we got the fantasy football preview working. How about you hop on later this week and we get going?
Let's do it, man. Hit me up, all right?
Sounds good, my guy.
All right, brother. Thanks a lot. For those listening, I'll be back tomorrow with another episode. My man, Denver Hunter Mark, should be a good one. For those listening, thank you very much for, and I will see you then. Until then, peace out.